Welcome. This is Christopher Holmes, and this is another two-hour session of Zero Point Radio. I'd like to apologize to listeners for last week because I was sitting at the phone for our usual show, and somehow we couldn't connect, and I'd had the numbers wrong and such. But anyway, we're back on air again today, and I have my regular co-host and friend, James Moffat, in the background there. Hello, James, from Jim from Toronto, Ontario.
Hi, Chris.
Jim?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, yeah.
You sound
Hi, Jim. How are you?
Okay, you sound a little...
Can you hear me okay? Well, I'm on a speakerphone today with our guest here.
No, it's hard to hear you. You sound like you're very distant.
Okay, well, I hear you well, and
okay,
I hope the...
That's better.
Yeah.
It allow for about almost a second delay sometimes when the person replies.
Yeah. Okay, so this is Christopher Holmes. I'm in New Zealand, absolutely beautiful, magical country of New Zealand. And I'm attending a prana conference here, which is by the ocean. And I'll say a few words on that at a later point in today's show and talk about the prana conference and what it's been like for me being here. Today I also have another guest on, and as well as my co-host in the background, James Moffat. I've recently done a number of renovations to my website, and I would encourage people to revisit my website. On my index page, I've added the linkages to a series of the newest kind of truth movement videos and movies that can be watched online. That I think is the types of material I think people need to attend to and consider as to what's happening in the world and the crises upon us, the human race, I would say, on the planet, in our history and evolution. We're living in a very dynamic and dangerous and chaotic and yet hopeful time. We have to try to wake up to be more aware of what is happening around us in the world. Try to serve some purpose in bringing back some sanity to the human race and the kind of madness which has overtaken the lives of humankind. And rushing ourselves into just further war crimes and chaos and destructiveness of people's health and the poisoning of the planet. This is the things happening in the world around us. People need to get out from other considerations and develop some sense of community and being a part of the planet and the world's problem. So in a way, it's really, I feel, people's responsibility to wake up to what's happening in the world and the types of issues I'm talking about and look at their own roles in these matters and things. We all have, in a way, to learn to come forth and to speak the truth and undo all these lies and deceptions that have overtaken the human race. In the way we live in a perilous time. That's also important for us who feel a certain upright of heart that we don't, we identify in a larger sense with the planet Earth and the people of the planet Earth. In a way, I, as a mystic scientist, I see all human beings are like cells of one human heart. It's all interrelated, and it's even interrelated in terms of the physics of the heart. That we are all interconnected as human beings, and we have to, those upright at heart, we need to become awake to what is happening in the world and help them to wake other people up and bring about positive change in our world. We're in a very serious kind of geopolitical, historical time period. So much truth has emerged and is emerging throughout the world about the deceptions and things that have gone on through human history and the problems we face as a human species. It really needs to be a time of awakening and an awakening to the true magic of life and realize that life is more than what it simply appears to us to be. That we are, in some sense, multidimensional beings and that there is actually a higher dimensional physics and metaphysics to the human heart. Through the Zero Point study, the two main ideas I tried to explain and explore One is the idea that the origins of human consciousness have to do with the mysteries of the human heart. So I elaborate the heart doctrine as a teaching. And I maintain that the heart doctrine is in all the different esoteric religions. It's in Christianity, esoteric Judaism and Kabbalah. It's in Sufism and Islam. It's in the secret doctrine of Madame Blavatsky. It's in the Tibetan Buddhism of the Dalai Lama. And then it's in the work of such institutes as the Heart Math Institute and the research of Dan Winters and other theorists and leading theorists who are considering that the human heart is tied into the whole nature of what a human being is as an I. Like, although we say I often, and is there an I in a human being, a singular I? If we look at what the scientists say about human beings, Francis Crick, who discovered DNA, he in his book called The Astonishing Hypotheses, and his astonishing hypotheses is that human beings have no soul nature, and that all we are is, quote, a pack of neurons. That is, the whole pack of neurons kind of get together, and these packs of neurons kind of generate a human being and your inner self experience. So they create your I out of a bunch of molecules and neurons. You're nothing but a pack of neurons, he says. The modern science has no psychology of the soul, but the psychology of consciousness, or at least not in the mainstream of science and philosophy for the past century. The whole study of the spiritual and soul life of humankind has been lost, and the divine life. We think science and religion is something completely separate, and that science somehow shows us the objective world and the religion is only a matter of belief and subjective world. But really, I would maintain there is a higher dimensional physics and metaphysics to the human heart, and this is the esoteric teaching embodied in all the world's religions, the heart doctrine. And so the concept, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, I am within the heart, seated as in a machine of material energy. So I'm saying we all have some I element within the heart, and this is what we say when we say I. This is like our central I, or we... And this is described in the Vedas, this is labeled the Jiva Atma, a spiritual spark. I would call it a divine source emanation, or a divine spark, or a God spark. Now this is in the world of emanation. The world of emanation is different from the world of radiation. Radiation, as we usually understand, the propagation of electromagnetic influence. So I'm saying there's a higher dimensional world of emanation, and then the world of electromagnetic influence, and then the material of material reality. And that we as human beings, we have a multidimensional origin. That in a sense, our central I is within the higher dimensional physics of our heart. And there is an element within this higher dimensional space of the heart, a monad for Blavatsky. This little element exists in higher dimensional space, which I would call hyperspace, or the eternal parent space for Madame Blavatsky. So we all, in a way, have a monad in hyperspace. And this is tied into the higher dimensional physics of the human heart. Often when I lecture, I play the pointing game with audiences. And in the pointing game, I get people to point at the ceiling, and point at your left foot, and point at your right ear, and point at the floor, then point to yourself. And you might think to yourself, where do you point to when you point to yourself? Do you point to your head? Do you think your eye, if you have an eye, is in your head? Or do you point more towards your heart as being your center of individual being existence? So I would say the heart is the center of the individual being existence. And that within the heart, you have this zero point source of life and of consciousness. And this is within the higher dimensional physics of the heart. Now, in modern science, they have difficulty explaining how there is a generation of the heartbeat. No one can explain what is it that brings life into the heart. The cells of the heart have this inherent capacity for the generation of electrical impulses. They build up electrical charge, discharge, and then they go through a cycle of generating electrical impulses. So in a way, we ourselves are these kinds of free energy entities that somehow extrapolate some kind of influence out of higher dimensions of space, that somehow there's a higher dimensional physics to the human heart. So part of the zero point teachings is it's all trying to understand the consciousness of the heart and how to cultivate living in the heart and what the relationship of the heart then is to the mind, because it's the light of the self which is in the heart can illuminate the mind and the higher faculties of the mind. A human being can be considered as possibly being of seven different types who might be aware of different of seven dimensions or aspects of life. In a way, Gurdjieff describes most people in life as being man number one, two, or three. Man number one, in a way, is most physical, or the physical aspect of us all, the body, sensation, and movement in the material world, that we can move objects around in space, and we can perceive the environment around us. So we have this sensory motor aspect to ourselves. That's our physical nature. And then there's the second is the emotional nature, our feelings and emotions. And these are related to our heart and to our breath and to our autonomic nervous system or the sympathetic nervous system. The sympathetic nervous system extends through the body and it has different nerve plexi, like the heart plexi and the solar plexi and the hypogastric plexi. But there are different... The autonomic nervous system also runs to the eyes. The eyes are controlled by the autonomic nervous system, and that's different from the voluntary nervous system, of which we have more control. The autonomic nervous system are feelings and emotions and how things affect us, and that is felt through the body. And emotions relate to substances in the blood, which carry the emotions and feelings. So we have a physical nature and we have an emotional nature, and then we have the realm of the mind, which is centered in the mind, in the head, rather than the emotional center. I'd say your heart and soul are related to the heart. So they're in the middle story of this three-storied being. We have a physical self, an emotional self, and then an intellectual or mental aspect in the mind, centered in the head. So we are three-brained beings. And the center of that whole system is the human heart. Mystical teachings suggest that consciousness isn't just in the head, like modern scientists assume. They think that the brain in the head produces human consciousness, even though this has never been explained. And I'm saying that human consciousness has to do with the mysteries of the human heart. And it has to do with our higher dimensional nature of the human heart. That I compare the heart doctrine to the modern head doctrine. The second area I try to explore is the concept of zero point. My website is www.zeropoint.ca. And this term zero point is taken from the writings of Madame Blavatsky from The Secret Doctrine. And she says all living beings have zero point centers. And she describes she says, the gods and other invisible powers clothe themselves in bodies based upon zero-point foundation. All this suggests is that, in a way, a human being is a quantum system within, existing within the zero-point field. You have a center, and that center is rooted into higher dimensional space, or what I would call hyperspace. And in a way, our essential self exists in higher dimensional hyperspace. That's our monad in hyperspace. And this entity in higher dimensional space has certain spin properties. It spins, it's continually in movement. And these spin energy, this spin energy can be imparted into the ethers of the vacuum surrounding that central zero point. And through that, it breaks the symmetries latent in the nothingness, and it creates different dimensions of material being that manifest out of the quantum vacuum. So in a way, we have these zero-point centers, which are, say, are in higher dimensional space, and the zero-point, in a way, is the portal. It is the level at which the gods and other invisible powers, their influences are brought down through zero-point dynamics and emerge within without from zero-point. So we as human beings, we emerge, we kind of begin as a point source. That's our true I. In Kabbalistic teaching, when the three supernals give rise to the sun, the fourth, the sun descends from the supernal triad of the tree of life, and it crosses what is called the abyss, which is the nothingness, or the chaos of everything in nothingness. And the eye, then the sun, emerges through the abyss, and it's called the 11th sephira, called Dot, D-A-apostrophe-A-T. And when we emerge as Dot, we cry out, I am. The descent of Dot, then, into material existence, it descends the central pillar of the tree of life, and it becomes established in the sephira of breath, which is associated with the sun and with the human heart. So the sun from above comes down and is established within the heart. Most of our consciousness is usually conditioned by lower levels. So our consciousness is centered in the next sephira on the central pillar, which is called Yesod, and is said to be centered over them, is related to the moon, and it's related to the genitals. The lowest level of consciousness, represented by material consciousness, is on the fourth, is the fourth level of consciousness on the tree of life. So I'm claiming then that we as human beings, we have this higher dimensional physics and science to the human heart. So through zero-point studies, I explore these two aspects, trying to understand the heart doctrine and the origins of issues of consciousness, and then trying to understand some of the physics of these zero-point sources and what this would actually mean to us. Today, I have a very interesting guest on, and we've had fascinating discussions before I've taken to the air. And today is going to be, we're going to try to look at some of this higher dimensional physics and metaphysics of the human heart. And we'll share some of the discussions we've been having here this morning. Okay. Yeah. So before I move ahead and interview Chaos, I have another friend here, Maya, and I'd like to take 10 minutes and just, I mentioned when I came on the air that I'm in New Zealand and I've been attending this conference festival, and it's been an absolutely wonderful experience thus far. On the coast, beautiful coast here of New Zealand, and this is a yearly festival, and I have one of the people, Maya, here with me, who I'm just introducing, and she's going to just ask her a few questions about the conference, and maybe she can share some of the background. the conference does have a website. It is www.trana.co.nz. And that's where you can explore their website, and they have some nice pictures of their site on online there, even though it can't possibly capture the magic of this land and this festival. So anyway, I'm very pleased to introduce Maya. Maya, welcome. Thanks for finding time in your schedule. You worked so hard with the setting up and working with the conference. Perhaps you might share with people a little bit about the history of the conference and what it embodies to you and what it's all about.
Thank you, Chris. I'm happy also to be able to make the time to be here. The Prana Festival, for me, and I think for many people, embodies time and place for many people in New Zealand and out of New Zealand, for international people, coming together in a beautiful natural environment to experience a sort of gathering of like-minded souls and everything that comes out of that at the end of the festival is usually very positive and healing for many people that are looking for a different way of life or just searching for some sort of connectedness with themselves through being with other people of like mind.
And in a holistic way and a healing way and the magic of the scenery. I love the beach. How long is the beach here? It's such beautiful sand. And
yeah, it's beautiful, isn't it? We're actually looking at it right now. It's about 7 kilometers long, and it's
wow,
beautiful white sand beach. And I can see people riding surf right now. And it's the South Pacific Sea, and it's just gorgeous. It's very clean and pristine.
Yeah, it's amazing. Some scenes just stick in my mind. I looked how the color of the ocean changed later in the day, and it went from kind of this early blue of the morning, and then by night it had that aqua color to it. That was so amazing looking out along the beaches yesterday and just seeing the white caps rolling in and really quite spectacular. And then you have all these kind of hills and people camped all through the hills, and it's really quite spectacular.
It is, and a couple of days ago we were able to see the full moon rising from Flipper Island. It was the full moon was just rising out of the ocean, basically, and that's beautiful at night time. Also, you can see all the stars. It's just gorgeous.
It was really nice last evening hearing some of the presentation, and your father, who I understand is usually kind of pretty shy or doesn't take the highlight or something, that he came and spoke a little bit about the history of the conference and how it began just even as a family gathering, and then it kind of grew into this larger and larger kind of community of people who come to Prana at this time of year for this special occasion.
That's right. It did come out very small, and I think it's continued because of the positive feedback and the need, I guess, for people to have this on a regular basis. I think it grew from that, the sense that we got that it's so appreciated. It's a small organization, but it's just growing and growing as the people come and experience it for the first time and keep coming back and keep giving us the positive feedback, like, you know, keep doing this because we get so much from it. People really get healed here and are able to grow personally in ways that is very necessary nowadays.
Yeah, that's what I felt. I thought prana kind of embodies what I try to talk about and teach about, is the heart doctrine. I felt all these people, like, there's a real love here. There's a whole a love behind the whole setting up and maintaining of this property, all the effort that goes into putting this event on, and the effort the people who work so devotedly to do that in such a free-spirited way. And then among the people at Prana, it's like, I mean, it's just, everybody is so friendly, and it's so many interesting and wonderful people who have all different aspects of the elephant and have these rich things to share in their lives and experience. It's just, it's wonderful. It reminds me a bit of what used to be called rainbow festivals in Ontario, and I guess those were through the States and elsewhere, the idea of the rainbow. This is like the rainbow crowd, you know, in another word and form. Do you ever identify with being a rainbow crowd? Are you familiar with that, Maya?
I've heard many people speaking about that. I've never been there. Maybe I'm too young or I just never had the time, but I've heard many people talk about the rainbow gathering.
Yeah, I always like the rainbow because to me the rainbow embodies what I teach about a little bit, like how in creation physics, if it said God is first one, then three, and then seven. Just like white light divided by a three-sided prism gives you a spectrum of seven colors. So a rainbow kind of embodies, like, we're these rainbow beings. We have these seven-dimensional nature to our higher-dimensional light within the human heart. So we are rainbow beings. And so that idea of the rainbow thing, well, prana is like that. I guess prana is this vital life energy that's healing and therapeutic. And prana, this festival, is just like this healing of the heart and well-being and the beauty of the place. It brings you back to something that's essential in yourself.
Yes, it's true. Everyone gets a chance here, and especially this year we've got the 5 days, so it's even more time to get settled and really have the time to feel all of that after all the, you know, because it is a camping festival, so everyone has to get settled first. But after that, people just smooth out and ease in to the environment here. And it's small enough for that intimate feeling that you feel connected with people here. And we like to hold on to that, I think, that it stays familiar, it stays like a big family. That feeling is really important because you feel safe and you feel accepted and appreciated here. So I hope we can keep that intimate feeling going, and that's the reward at the end of the day, actually.
It was funny, my first night here, I found, oh, I can't use my cell phone. Oh, darn, okay, I wanted to make a phone call. But then I thought, wow, I'm not being irradiated by cell phone power. How wonderful. I found a place where they can't cook me.
Yeah. But for the people that really need to get the cell phone reception, we've got this tree stump, and there's this little nasturtium plant that grows near it, and people are standing around this tree stump, and there's also a little baby tree growing there, and that's where you can get reception. And it's just really, it's quite humorous to have this one spot on the land where you can get reception.
Well, I walk out to the beach. That's what I'm doing. I thought, but there's a lot of beach noise in the background.
Yeah.
Okay. And one thing is that in prana, you don't particularly have any food, or maybe you do, like philosophy background or religious background yourself, or as a family thing. Do you? Or you just like rainbow people.
I wouldn't want to put any label on anyone here coming from any particular religious background. Our family spent a lot of time in India. I think we picked up some spiritual philosophy there. And we're all individuals here, and we're all on our own path. And I think we've picked up whatever we need from the esoteric to develop in our own way, and everyone's just doing that in their own way.
Yeah, that's so neat, because in a way you're no name. See, in a way you're no name, and kind of in being no name you're kind of like nothing and everything at the same time. You can just be, and you can kind of learn some things and just be. You kind of all want to just come into just being. You don't kind of want to follow something as a set of ideas in our head and in our imagination, or something we've been told or led to believe or conditioned into. We just all kind of want to come into being ourselves. And then in a way, we become no name. And kind of that no name is like all names in a way. So if we come to learn to live in the heart, it doesn't matter if you're Hindu or Christian or theosophist or what you are. It's because teaching is kind of the same. But in a way, we're all no name. So yeah. We want to find our no name.
That's right, not get stuck with dogmas. Yeah.
And kind of being here at Prana kind of allows you to be a known name. It can kind of let you help you let go of the thoughts, all the things people usually have on their mind and they carry about with them. And you try to let that go and come back to breathing and being in the land, inspired by the place and having such a community among people. It's really very special here, and you've created a real magic here. Respect. You and your family for what you've done.
And and the extended family. That feeling. It's the spiritual family. We have so many members of the family. It's not even by blood anymore. It's by spirit.
Yeah.
That's what's been created. And people that come here from all over the world who are searching, they... Some of them live here, some of them come back every year. They all find something that they need on an individual level, and this space is open in that way. Everyone is just accepted for who they are. And it's very much down to the person as well, of course. You know, if you can accept yourself for who you are, it makes it much easier for other people, of course. So it's like we're on the individual journey, but we're also part of the collective. And many people go through all sorts of trials and tribulations on that level of finding out who they are here. And once they come through it, it's a big healing. And there's always support here.
So much in the world today, it's like everybody has isolated lives. Like everybody has their little house or apartment, and you kind of live in there, and you occasionally see your neighbors, and you see people at work. But in a way, most people, or many people, don't have any of that sense of community. I'd say it's more so in the Western world, I think, than the Eastern world, which has traditionally been more family-based. And so in a way, it is that people have such isolated, lonely lives. And it's hard to have that sense of community in such a open or hearted place and such a beautiful space to bring you back to feeling alive and letting go of all the things on the mind and your isolation and such. And I can just see how we need, people in the world need to find such communities and do other endeavors along this line where we have the sense of community and be in community with other people and share together in other ways.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
I mean, it happened in the 70s, and it seems to be coming back now. There's a huge need for that community feeling again. And personally, I think it's possible when we take responsibility for ourselves. You know, what happened in the 70s, and from my own experience living in communities around the world, is that it was almost like an experiment. And for a lot of people that I know, it didn't quite work out. So what I've learned from that, just looking around me and growing up in communal environments, is that as long as you can take responsibility for yourself, then you become much more valuable spoke, so to speak, in the wheel, which a community can be.
Yeah, I like that image, because the idea of all the spokes in the wheel, but like that's what I would say about all of us humankind. We're all spokes in the wheel. And if you take any one of those spokes in the wheel and you follow that spoke, and it comes to the core of the whole of the wheel. So it's kind of like I see human beings like that. Like we all think we're separate spokes in the wheel. And what we got to realize is kind of we're all part of this wheel, which is within us all. And we have these kind of higher dimensional natures together as a species and human beings. And all human beings, in a way, are interconnected, sharing a human heart. And and there's a higher dimensional science to all of this.
Mm.
So we are spokes in the wheel. We're sparks of God. We all have that God spark within us. And so then, in a way, we all come out as the same one. And you can call it whatever you want. You can call it Brahman, or you can call it that for Madame Blavatsky, or you can call it the Ein Sof Hour for the Kabbalist. In a way, we all come out as one life source, and we're all individual expressions of that one. We all do have an eye that crosses the abyss and emerges out of negative existence, and it emerges into positive existence from a zero point center. And cries out, I am, and then you kind of surround yourself and your life with your life. And we all need to find ourselves. And this is such a healing place in New Zealand. And people around the world need such places where they find community again and overcome their isolation. Why is it that anytime people want to gather together, they always kind of want to have a football game? Or I saw on TV the other day a reporter talked about men with balls and all the kind of ball games all these men play. I'm kind of like, why is everyone kind of like, wow, big ball games, you know, and every, like, this kind of phenomenon of modern times, and everybody sits at home in isolation and watches the ball game, and that, you know, like, and there's so many distractions, and we all, you know, I like watching hockey games. I've always been, I'm not being critical of this, but in a way it becomes too important to people. And it's the only time people get out of together is at a ball game. You know, why don't people need other gatherings where that's not what the focus is, that you're part of a community and you'd be sharing and open to other people, and this is really important. People need in their lives, and I think especially in the States in these troubled times and around the world, in Canada, there's this kind of paranoia, which is quite justifiable. You have legitimate reason. There's this kind of whole terror and fear, and there is, and it's pervasive through the world, and we have to try to be strong and don't come to believe in all the lies of things. And we have to kind of get back to having community and interrelated with other people in your communities and in your families. But get back to what's important in your life. And all of us need to do this. Sometimes you don't need to turn the TV off. You know, go do something else. Get out in nature. Spend some time. Gurdjieff once said for human beings to awaken, they really needed an organ implanted in them. And this organ made them always aware of the inevitability of their own death. Okay, so if you realize how you could die, like in a way, physically, that your life would be over, if you knew you had limited time or period to live, what would you do? And in most people, if you had that option, you would like radically change what you're doing in your health. Many things that you're doing would drop away because they're insignificant, they're nothing. In a way, you become so concerned with the insignificant and impermanent and intemporal. And you would want to kind of get back to those people who you love in your life and to be with them and talk to them and resolve things in your life. So in a way, in our lives, we all need to be doing that all the time. We should be living as though, you know, every day could be the last day of your life. And what would you have done, and what were you doing? What do you want to say, you know, on the other side, you know? Good game? I mean, it's true, it is a good game. This is kind of, so we're all in this kind of magical mystery game, and we kind of want to wake up and be part of the magic of what our lives are and what's happening on the globe in this time. There's a real magical mystery tour going on here. A real Lord of the Rings like there are many levels of what's happening in the world. Kind of forces of goodness and evil, and my goodness, like real crime drama, you know, and positive and negative forces in the world, and these things quite alien to human beings. You know. So we have to get back to ourselves and wake up to what you're doing in your life and how you're living your life and what you want to be in your life and finding yourself. Learning to love, I just see, is the kind of so central to the whole thing. It's like the healing of the human heart.
And as soon as you've loved yourself, it's much easier. Start with yourself, trust in your heart, and then accept and love yourself. And the rest just goes from there.
And I think it helps people love themselves when they find the people around them accept them as they are. Like, although they may have this habit or that habit or this folly or that folly, but they're just who they are, and that's beautiful. Aleister Crowley says, the first principle of magic, he says, every man and every woman and every child is a star. So in a way, we are all a star, just as you are. Actually, this reminds me of a quotation. This is a poem I wanted to read on air this morning, and I got away from this. I have it here to read. I'd like to read this. It's a simple child poem written by Special K, who may be out there listening to this show. She writes, "You are a star birthed from within without the night. You are a star reflecting some light. You are a star, that's what you are. You are a star. You are a star that cries out, 'I am,' before flight. You are a star that's been pushed out into the light. You are a star, that's what you are. You are a star. You are a star filled with luminous light. You are a star blissful and bright. You are a star, that's what you are. You are a star. You are a star, a pearl of great price. You are a star stuck in a jar. You are a star, that's what you are. You are a star. You are a star turned topsy-turvy from the flight. You are a star filled with limitless light. You are a star, that's what you are. You are a star. You are a star playing hide and seek in God's place. You are a star within the heart space. You are a star, that's what you are. You are a star. You are a star that heals with a smile. You are a star, that's who you are. You are a star. You are a star reflecting sunlight. You are a star no matter where you are. You are a star." Thank you, Ms. Kay, for that beautiful and inspired poem. And I think that's a bit like what Prana Festival and being here is like for me. It's like a place where people can realize that they're stars and that we're all okay as we are, and we can love ourselves and be in loving community with other talented and rich people. And in enjoying the richness of life and company and songs and music, skits and all kinds of nice things here. Things for the kids, the magic shows and circus training and, you know, all kinds of different kinds of holistic therapies and other healers and interesting individuals. So I would like to thank Maya for being my host and sharing some of the background of the Prana Festival. And I hope I'm back here next year, and I can see why people would come back because of the sense of community and the richness of the program here. Okay, thank you. And so I'll remind you again, it's www.prana.co.newzealand. Okay, so I have a very interesting guest with me today, and I will just check in here. Jim, are you still there, Jim?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, I we kind of got off quite a bit and I just have left you in the background. That sounds pretty wonderful here, eh, Jim?
I'm a star stuck in a jar.
You are a star stuck in a jar. Yeah, you're right. But you know, Jim, one of the quotations that I most love is from, I think he's a Sufi poet, Kabir, and he says, inside this jar are seven oceans and innumerable stars.
Wow.
Isn't that beautiful? So the seven oceans are the seven aspects of the ethers, and the stars, each of us is one of those stars. So here is this jar, and that reference in the quote, in the poem, Karen's poem, is in reference, I think that was part of the image for her of Kabir's quotation that in this jar there are seven oceans and innumerable stars. So we are all stars stuck in the jar.
I'm looking at the website and it looks absolutely fantastic. There's absolutely gorgeous. And I'm sure it's that much more magical to be there rather than to be looking at the picture. But it's interesting when you were talking about that I was in Ottawa over the Christmas holidays to be with my family. And you know, there's a sense of community in that, I think, in being with your family. And at this time, it's particularly difficult because my sister-in-law has been very sick and has had cancer, two different types of cancer in the last couple of years. And it sort of strips away a lot of the little things in your life, and you realize it's important. But on the drive home, I was driving along Highway 7 to Toronto from Ottawa, and I've driven that hundreds of times over the years. And it's winter, and there's snow everywhere in the fields, and the lakes are frozen. And I was just struck. The sun was just brilliant, and of course, it's reflecting off the snow and the ice. And I was just like so struck by this drive, like how gorgeous this land was, how magical it was. So you know, as I say, sometimes we just have to wake up to what's around us, rather than, you know, we don't have to really go anywhere in a sense. You know, it's the earth is an extraordinarily beautiful place if we can remember to you know, remember how beautiful it is.
Yeah, in a way, it's like waking up to it, waking up to the natural beauty around you. Yeah. So it's so much, it's like what we are in our own awareness and conscious being, in a way, that we have to shift in that and be aware of the beauty around us.
Yeah, I had one other thing. I've been reading about the history of science recently, and I was really struck by, I'm really struck by how the heart doctrine and the zero point teaching really, when you have that perspective, how you can really see how the birth of modern science has taken human knowledge really off the tracks in a significant way. So it's really extraordinary how what we celebrate as progress, and in many ways is not progress at all. In terms of the development of knowledge, yeah, we can do things in the physical world, but we've really lost our sense of cosmic connection and the sense of the reality that we are multidimensional beings in a multidimensional universe. And I really see that more and more, how in the last 300 years we've gained. Ken Wilber talks about I forget what the first term is, like the triumph of modernity, and then the disaster of modernity. And the disaster of modernity is that we've collapsed everything, the multidimensional nature of ourselves and the universe, into the flat land, which is the intellectual landscape of modern science.
It's like materialism, which is just so shallow, like just the view that all there is material reality, and that disbelieving that it's that materialist philosophy, which was kind of tacked on to science, but isn't inherent to the facts of science. It's more the interpretation of the facts of science is this kind of superficial materialistic philosophy, science philosophy. So that is what has limited us. But meanwhile, science has advanced more and more, finding more and more peculiar and unusual nature to reality. and coming closer and closer to the esoteric teaching. And I think in our discussion today with my next guest, we'll kind of see that, because his background is in science, in electrical engineering and physics. And he studied the work of Dan Winters, who's an individual who also elaborates the form of the heart doctrine and trying to explain the science of it and sacred geometry and such. So maybe we'll move on, Jim, and I'll introduce our guest. And what we're looking at is kind of an expanded, multidimensional model of human existence, and we have to overcome that kind of superficial materialism and consider the higher dimensional nature of life processes. And I have a most interesting guest on here today, his name is Tejas. T-E-J-A-S, but where it's a soft J, so it's like an H, Tejas. And his name actually means triangle of fire, which is really quite beautiful. And I'm interested in the kind of principles of magic, and the equilateral triangle turned upwards represents fire and spirit. And then an equilateral triangle turned downwards represents water, the element water. And in Genesis and creation physics, you have the Spirit of God that moves across the face of the water. And in all different esoteric creation teachings, so we have these elements. The first two elements are fire and water, representing the roots of spirit and matter. Anyway, so Tejas is the meaning. Sorry, Tejas, I got off from the meaning of your name, but I am going to come to you here. And Tejas is a professor, a university-level professor in electrical engineering and science. And he studied in the esoteric and occult tradition, and yet he walked in that other world as being in electrical engineering and being knowledge of science. So he's someone who, in his life, struggled to integrate the mystical, shamanistic aspect with his study of science. And he does by day and one he does by night. And that's a really, he mentioned that someone described him as a Clark Kent, who kind of by day, you know, you're a reporter and you work for the newspaper, but then by night you can be a Superman and explore the super realms and super ideas, like the new science that's emerging. Many people don't want to be encumbered anymore with this blind materialism of modern times. Anyway, Tejas has studied in the issues of and physics and science, and we're going to have we had most wonderful discussion earlier, and I know I want to bring up some of the things he shared, which happen to be the key ideas that I can incorporate into the next phase of my own writing, in my writing of Volume 3 of the Within Without series, and Volume 3 of it is called Triune Monads in Seven-Dimensional Hyperspace. So with Tejas, I want to kind of bring, we're going to be talking about like the physics of the heart and the higher dimensional metaphysics. So we've had this most amazing discussion today. And I took some notes at the time because I want to go to the points that came up because they illustrate perfectly the types of things I've been trying to explain and explore. Welcome, Tejas. Thank you for finding time today to be with us.
Hey, thank you, Christopher. Yeah, it's a privilege to be here. And I'd like to welcome you all to the signal from New Zealand, where nature rules still. Civilization is relatively new here, and I think that's what makes it such a magical healing place often, is that the harmonies of nature just run much deeper into yourselves here than perhaps in a lot of other parts of the world. So, yeah, we have this wonderful festival here each year, and as you've heard, brings together a very interesting mix of different paths and a glorious exchange in very loving ways. And
Yeah, last evening, Tejas and I shared the evening stage in, is it called the Barn, Tejas? Yeah, this kind of beautiful kind of cafe, open room with a kind of stage, and we had a sound system, and Tejas and I both took an hour and explored aspects of our teaching and research, and it was really magical evening, and it kind of opened up a lot for me in meeting Tejas, because he has a knowledge in areas that I'm trying to gain knowledge in, and yeah, I thought in our presentation in a way, I thought we presented in the wrong order, because Tejas presented first, but in a way, and then I presented secondly, but in a way, my work is, and teaching is simpler. In a way that I'm trying to look at the idea of the psychology of the heart from a psychological perspective, and in terms of like trying to understand human consciousness. So that has led me into the study of the heart doctrine. So I come from it explaining the whole idea of the heart being the center of a human being as a living being. And I elaborate the heart doctrine. Then Tejas, he presented earlier than I did, and he had presented more complex ideas all about the kind of the shapes of the heart and the torus of the heart and the models of higher dimensions and how it's related to DNA and this more complex scientific aspect, which extends the kind of work I do into the looking at the science of the heart. And I felt afterwards that I should have presented first, because my work leads up to the point where we say, okay, we've got to look at the physics and the metaphysics of the human heart. And that's kind of where Tejas begins, is by trying to understand some of the physics and science of that. Maybe you'd share something, pick up somewhere here, Tejas, and share.
Okay, yeah, so... Yeah, I've always had a passion for science, for, you know, individual approach to science, and always seen things my own way along the path of making the right steps in the establishment to keep in there. And right through the 1980s, I was an instrumentation engineer for Hewlett-Packard, that makes very high-tech scientific instrumentation. Had access to all sorts of secret research labs and helping people solve measurement problems and so on. And I was always very interested in the capabilities of these spectrum analyzers and so on to analyze much more of what I see, you know, the whole world is. Everything is vibration, and different vibrations and frequencies are the formative forces that we manifest out of. And so, having this instrumentation to look at how these life processes work has always been a fascination. And I don't know, probably 15 years ago or so, I attended a talk by Dan Winter, who visited Auckland here in New Zealand, and got pretty inspired about the technology he's been developing with a group called the Implosion Group in the Netherlands. And they, in essence, have got, you know, technology's become accessible now where you can get a little $1,000 type box that hooks up to your laptop PC with software and can register all of the frequencies contained in the spaces between the heartbeat, basically. And the Christopher's statements about the consciousness being so focused in the heart allows kind of an interface to the world of computer measurement instrumentation from the heart. The heart can respond very dynamically with different sets of frequencies, and it tells a whole story that when we watch the derived sort of heart coherence signals that we get on the screen of the computer, it's very, very responsive to elevated states of bliss or ecstasy or heightened amounts of heart coherence. And so it's a wonderful biofeedback tool to allow us to explore whatever internal techniques access our enlightened condition. and the screen very nicely shows you this heart coherence peak, which grows as you integrate more fractality into your heart. Really, the essence is this zero point idea that CRISPR tells us about, and that as of right, we as biological entities are built to access this energy cascade through the zero point center that we have at the core of our heart system. It's like the multidimensional gateway that all things pass through. So what increasing our heart coherence allows us to do is get closer and closer to accessing that kind of infinite energy in the void. The masters have always talked about infinite energy being available in the void, and physics confirms when we get down to zero point, the energy goes to infinity. But a few odd little quirks of this quantum world keep us from getting that small and accessing that infinite energy by any direct means.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's because of the uncertainty principle in quantum theory that you can only take measurements to a certain degree of accuracy, and then something beyond that it passes into the infinite. So it's like you can measure something to what's called the Planck's length. The Planck's length is actually 10 to the minus 33 centimeters. So it's less than the billionth of the diameter of a proton. So we can, in quantum theory, measure something only to that degree of exactitude, and then it passes into the infinite. It's like it's a portal. I would say it's a portal. As you get down something, examine something down closer and closer to zero point levels, it then kind of emerges into higher dimensions, just beyond, which are infinite with respect to the lower dimension. So zero point levels there could be portals out of higher dimensions and then to lower dimensions. That's very nice how you describe there being an energy cascade through the heart, that somehow that life emerges from zero point levels through this kind of zero point heart center, and the energy that cascades through that dynamic, which we're trying to understand.
Right, and this is one of the kind of magical things from a scientific point of view about this particular heart coherence technology. It initially measures the instrument, or the software measures the regular heartbeat we see, and then it does a frequency spectrum analysis of that. It's a nice spectral content that the set of frequencies contained in each heartbeat gets displayed to us. And then the extra touch that the enclosure group Dan Winter had added is a kind of a second order spectrum analysis of the spectrum analysis, which identifies when we get, if you visualize a frequency spectrum on the x-axis, it's frequency running along, and on the y-axis it's the amount, the height, the amplitude of each frequency. And you get these little lines of different frequencies, of harmonic spacing, that have different amplitudes. Well, the interesting discovery is that there's a huge correlation between the most elevated states of consciousness and bliss that people can attain and the occurrence of a fractal cascade of those frequency peaks. So, in other words, the first frequency peak on your left, say that the fundamental harmonic is maybe one high, and then the next one might be the golden mean ratio less than that, and the next one the golden mean ratio less than that. So when we hit these golden ratio magical numbers, then the frequency content in our heartbeat, the coherence signal displays itself to be larger and correlates very closely with what takes us to our states of bliss and ecstasy. So as a biofeedback tool, it's absolutely wonderfully responsive to subtle energy changes, what you do with your intention, practice your favorite breathing technique or meditation technique, or kiss your lover, or whatever lights you up, shows very clearly in the signal and can teach us which of our techniques are probably more of a waste of time and which ones really work.
Yeah, it's interesting, KS, that this instrumentation, like how we're now looking at the biofeedback of the heart, because historically the emphasis has always been on biofeedback, looking at brain states and monitoring alpha and beta waves and rhythms and theta rhythms and so on. So historically the focus has been on trying to use brain wave conditioning as a way of attaining peaceful states or a more conscious states. And in Paul Pearsall's book called The Heart Code, the biofeedbacker Gary Schwartz states that whereas the 20th century might have been called the century of the brain, he predicted that the 21st century would be the century of the heart, and that the it's like the psychology and science of the human heart is this kind of futuristic science, and that we're bordering on coming to an understanding of that, that human beings, in a way, we're not all at all what we've been thought or taught that we were supposed to be, with the brain producing consciousness in the head. Instead, there's this whole higher dimensional physics to the heart, and we're, in a sense, we're ensouled through the heart. So if we have this view of the heart doctrine, then this technology follows perfectly that we should be looking at the nature of the heartbeats and the cycles of the heart and trying to attain what you're describing here as this heart coherence. And you can actually have biofeedback mechanisms that give you a sense of a way of looking at the coherence of the human heart. The idea we see in mystical teachings is the heart is a mind of its own. And in a way, the heart is more deeply grounded into the dimensions of being than the mind in the head, which in a way reflects the light and knowledge of the sun.
So one path with the heart.
Yeah, Don Juan says we have to find a path with the heart. Yeah, exactly. But this is actually looking then. So that's what we were seeing last night. I guess you, in our talk, in our show together, you at one point you showed, I guess, Dan Winter's older method of breaking down and looking at the heart rhythms and harmonics, and then a newer form of that same program. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just been some great refinement, particularly by the main kind of software man that's producing all the technology in the Netherlands with the Implosion Group. HeartCoherence.com is one way to track them down. And yes, there's kind of concepts that it's very leading edge stuff, this. So the kind of information being derived is in its infancy and already very exciting, just watching. I can remember back in the early 90s with a close friend of mine who's a medical doctor, we went off into the Hopi Reservation in the US and made some great connections with the shaman there and had a pretty magical time. Recently, when we were wired up on this heart machine and we just focused our energy back on those magical experiences, it was incredibly vividly displayed on the heart coherence display. And often when we're first getting people used to working with the machine, we suggest remembering when you were first in love, or like a child about to get a puppy or something, and those states show you, you know, much more coherence in your heart frequency. So there's lots of more information to come out of it, but what the early software showed, particularly were cursor lines on the screen, where when your coherence peak moves around sort of horizontally across the screen, there were cursor lines that suggested that the sacred geometry, the golden mean ratio in that derived signal, one of the cursor lines is like when your consciousness is more focused in the head. The other cursor line is when you're more in the heart. It seems to be able to track when you direct your consciousness at the head or the heart, and shows the habitual place on that continuum that any individual sits. Their signal appears there mostly, if they're familiar with. And one of the biofeedback objectives is to learn to, at will, move freely from head to heart through the whole spectrum and know where you are. And the screen confirms that. So the whole essence of life, this fractal idea, is the thing of self-similarity or self-duplicating, and the whole magic of DNA and all those implications. This is the idea of recursion. When we attain high coherence in our heart, all the frequencies cascade in the golden mean ratios, in these fractal ratios, and recursively add and multiply both wavelength and velocity at the same time, and what's called implode down to infinity, ever smaller. Many of you may have seen these fractal graphics images, these beautiful fern-like fractal graphics that, you know, like the fern leaf with little curly ferns on each part of the leaf, and so it goes on down forever. The old saying, as above, so below, or I am that I am, of this idea of turning inside out into infinity by going down to our own zero-point core. And it's this implosion that we need to attain in our hearts. What it really means to implode like that is the perfect embedding of many, many frequencies. And that is what's often experienced as love. And when we get all that coherence, it's interesting here, at this Prana Festival, it's originated out of a bunch of people coming together to reform, play music and jam together in a beautiful place. It started out in just a simple barn and got evolved from there. And one of the things that happens every now and then is like the muse visits. Everyone's ready and suddenly everyone's on. Everyone's coherent in the group. Every bit of timing's impeccable. And noticeably, the power levels just get very, very high when that happens. And it's the same thing in the heart, really, as I see it. The musical frequencies need to be really kind of on and coherent with each other, and we need to explore for ourselves what works for us to bring that state about. And then that directs us down through this infinite recursion, down to lower and lower and lower, down to zero eventually, and it's like forms a wormhole, this ever-decreasing recursion down to zero point in size, pops out into the infinite space of all that is. So all of us, all of our zero points, say, in the center of our heart, wormhole into the one same all that is space as every other one of us does. That is the connecting point into beyond space and a higher dimensional force. So this sort of heart tuner technology is very exciting edge now that we can access in our home environments on our laptop PCs or whatever. They're opening up some very exciting guidelines into refining that coherence in our heart.
Yeah, it certainly gives us a whole new way of trying to understand our inner self experience, because you show on a screen. It gives you this kind of biofeedback that you can see, oh yeah, scientifically, materially, these are the processes going on within me. So you can kind of draw the correlation between your own inner state and what's displayed on the screen. So this is a immensely valuable kind of approach to trying to look at conscious experience scientifically and what is involved in conscious experiences. And then you see a correlation of particular patterns of activity in the display, the computer display that breaks down the heart frequencies in the analysis. You can see that how that correlates to our inner state of consciousness and experience. So we see that, oh, all consciousness isn't just up in the head. We don't have to monitor brain activity in the neocortex to find consciousness. Here's this direct monitoring of the heartbeat and the blood flow that is giving us direct indications of conscious experience and the quality of conscious experience. So the technology makes so much sense in my own terms, how I argue the heart doctrine is more significant than the head doctrine, that in the way the mind in the head is secondary to the deeper dynamics of the human heart. And Theus is describing here this idea of infinite reincursions or recursions, and how as you follow something or reiterations where something is repeated over and over again inwardly on different dimensions. So that's kind of fractal reiteration of certain patterns that occur fractally, and they normally they emerge, I would say, things, a living being emerges within without from a zero point. So that there's a fractal generation from a zero point source, and that's reiterated through space from the central zero point. So that's more like involution, the descent of spirit into the material form. And then there's the counter process of the implosion that Theus was describing, that it is this return again into of awareness into this kind of higher dimensional reiterations that are inherent within the heart. So trying to get back to those deeper levels of the heart experience.
Yeah, I'm reminded too that a lot of people may be familiar with the idea of kinesiology and muscle testing and so on, and whatever, the heart, the body, the consciousness system can give feedback as to, for example, what homeopathic remedies might be suitable or not, or what enhances one's energy. And this heart tuner tool is very much correlates with the kinesiology signal. So it shows, you hand someone some homeopathics or whatever, the coherence goes up or down according to whether that is right for them. And so it is a healing therapeutic tool. So huge potential. There's a lot of very exciting work just beginning to be looked at with attention deficit syndrome and all the related family of conditions, and how this tool can have enormous effect once coherence is taught to people struggling with that. Great things can happen.
Just to stay with this for a moment, we so much need alternatives to all these manufactured petroleum products, which we call drugs, that are used so much to solve illness, and so many of them introduce these kinds of foreign substances into our bodies and into our blood. But I can see how this kind of technology of the heart, or mapping of the heart, how that kind of process might be helpful to people with, for instance, depression. I mean, isn't it said that, I think in the U.S. I read that there are surveys that say 40% of people, up to 40%, suffer from clinical depression. So do you think you could take your equipment and you could see the difference between people in states of depression versus people who are having a better time?
Absolutely. I mean, aside from that you're very flat when you're depressed and the coherence signal kind of looks sort of very flat, there's a whole other concept displayed of heart rate variability, which is used in a lot of standard hospital technology as well to indicate, you know, among other things, the degree of vitality. And what that's all about is, I guess, the permaculture idea of diversity. The more diversity you have, the more power you have. So what this heart coherence technology teaches as well is to embed as many different frequencies into the one space as possible that accesses you greatest power of that infinite energy in the void, in the zero point. So,
It's interesting, in Pearsall's book called The Heart Code, he gives a quotation. He says that the electromagnetic volume of the heart is 5,000 times greater than the electromagnetic volume of the mind in the head. So if we're to consider a human being as a living quantum system, which we are, meaning composed of quanta and such, our true center would be the heart rather than the brain and the mind. Not to say that's unimportant, as it obviously is important to our mental functions and cognition and faculties of the mind and practical intelligence. but in a way, in terms of our being center, that the heart is the deepest level of our being existence. So the healing, I remember one quote from Helene, it's Occult Anatomy and the Bible, and she said, the healers of the world heal the body, but the healers of the soul heal the heart. So in a way, the kind of deeper emotional healing and physical healing, I would say both, really need this healing of the heart and trying to attain some a further awakeness and sense of being existence within this kind of physics of the heart.
Right, and it just leads on so far. I mean, a couple of points coming up there. The one, of course, is the analogous path to accessing what is sometimes termed free energy in the zero-point sense, and really emulating what we do as living beings with our hearts. But before I get onto that, it's just another point that I find quite exciting. For some time, I've despaired about how we get through to the young people with this stuff, and all of the computer games designed to reward you to shoot the crap out of each other is pretty disturbing, really. So what's emerging out of this technology, too, is a wonderful approach to gaming, where, for example, and a simple idea now, I know it's acknowledged the HeartMath Institute as well for this. They're doing the parallel work to Dan Winter, heartmath.com, I think it is. And one of their games is like this hot air balloon on the screen that you're traveling along and across countryside, and there's obstacles and walls and things to get past, and you don't get to get over them until you increase your coherence signal from your heart electrodes, and that lifts the balloon up, so you get rewarded for getting yourself together. And a very interesting direction in gaming writing. I may well write some software myself to try and get through to the young guys sitting on the computers all day.
Wow, how interesting that is. Yeah, different approach of gaming. Yeah, and you just hook people up with basic electrodes on their wrist. So it's a pretty basic technology.
Well, yeah, and it's even
incorporated into games.
It is it's still very basic. Like, it's frustrating having wires to them. My dream next is to create a set of wireless transmitters of the heartbeat and do things like some of the therapeutic dance groups and that, have everyone wired up in a projector with everyone visible on the screen and where they are to each other, because as you engage in the sort of dance or playing music together, you can see where the two heart signals kind of cohere with each other. So lots of interesting possibilities with even more easy access to that heartbeat signal.
Wow, all so interesting. It just makes one aware of how we lack any science of the heart. Everyone in psychology, no one in my whole 25 years in the university system, no one ever considered there was a psychology of the heart. Like, first, if you were interested in the heart, you should be going into medicine. What's that got to do with psychology? Whereas in all the esoteric teachings, like, the heart is our real being, center of our being existence. So we've neglected the kind of study of the heart and soul in modern psychology for over a century. And now what we see as we go into the 21st century, the new science of the heart is emerging, that there is a higher dimensional physics and metaphysics to the human heart. And that in a way this is basic to our healing and to the quality of our being existence. So this whole science of the heart, this is really most interesting and important kind of advances, I think.
The technology has just got to a very exciting point where it's accessible to us everyday people with our home PC technology. And just so much can be revealed by everyone, you know, exploring the different ways it works for them. There's some new developments in the software where they're talking about group connections on the internet, where your interface on your software will link into all the others, and you can cohere with a whole group that you're tuning into around the world.
This is actually so interesting also. Like, in our time, you have what's called the intention experiment. And the intention experiment is, like, often people talk about trying to have a global mind or a global brain, but the idea traditionally is that people are kind of interconnected through their thoughts, that we all kind of want to think the same thing and try to actualize our thoughts or our mental intentions. But what this is suggesting is that really the most formative level is really within the heart rather than simply thoughts of the mind. That there's this, that the, what manifests in the world around us may have to do with this deeper physics and science of the heart, and that intentions wouldn't simply be something mental, but should also connect to this science and physics of the heart.
I think, yeah, the teachings of Don Juan, for example, showed, you know, we needed the path of the heart, and it was very much about intention coming out from the torso. And one of the old terms, like, there's lots of ancient traditions of, like, addressing the symmetry angles necessary to impress charge into their DNA and so on in the ancient technology, and a term called cohering the vacuum. And that's accessing that infinite energy in the zero point by your ability to cohere all your frequencies to get into this implosive numerical kind of sacred geometry, basically. The stories of shamans steering tornadoes and so on. The whole tornado, the way the tornado forms, has a lot of analogies to this wormhole effect of imploding down to a zero point once you get that golden ratio working in your frequency. Glands learn to spray these magnetic wave ratios as emotions and so on, and they nest in the kind of hypercurling of the DNA. It's a very exciting concept when you start possibly talking about the ether thing and perhaps getting on to devices. If our consciousness can be clear and in our integrity enough, we may be able to entrain some mechanical devices to behave in similar ways to what living organic beings do in terms of accessing that energy in the void and maybe running our cars or our households of it, getting over the fossil fuel addiction.
So we might be able to have a warm feeling towards our new free energy device, and because we had a good feeling towards it, it might run our fridge for half an hour.
You've got to be nice to it.
So then we're all talking to our appliances, please, please, toast me some cola. I surrender.
Well, an aspect that I've heard actually literally of this is a character over in Australia that had a sort of free energy technology working to run his car, and strange happenings like the engine ran dead cold and it didn't seem to be running on any fuel. But the thing I loved about it was it was one of these sort of coherent zero point effects, because it would only run for some people. People who were out of integrity with their coherence would shut the engine down. So it's great, you know, like another positive reward for getting your act together. Your car will take you, you know, your car will actually run for you if you're nice to it.
Or it's like having a skeptic in a parapsychology experiment who through their negative intentions will kind of prevent the natural flowing through of it. So that, what amazing possibilities in that. That's really almost interesting.
Well, and the thing I love about it is that you know, I kind of really encourage everyone, like, actually the less scientific training you've got, the better. It gets in the way. And anyone, you know, playing around, looking out the window while you're washing the dishes, can come up with a concept to tap into this etheric infinite realm. There are just a few principles in some of these what are called over-unity devices. Like, what, one example is what they call rate effect, where if you can cause something to transfer between two polarities at a higher rate than it's normally familiar of doing it with, it's like you suck some extra energy in out of the void along the way. It's like running a paddle through a soup or something, and all these vortices left behind the spoon are these etheric eddies that you can create. So I guess that takes us on to the old concept of the ether and I love the ancient spelling of that word, A-E-T-H-E-R. It was a very fundamental principle until the popular scientific theories of the late 1800s, I guess, tried to shut it down, and as we know, Madame Blavatsky sort of gets that trend in science, and it's coming back strong now. A lot of concepts of the ether and thinking of infinite ways we can create. One of my loves is kind of in the permaculture sense, is appropriate technology, simple technology that can build out of junkyard stuff that can access certain effects. And we pride ourselves in New Zealand particularly because we're at the far end of the earth by definition. We're over the edge from everywhere. And we've never had access to many high-tech resources. So one of the favourite sayings in New Zealand is we'll always make something work with a piece of stick and a piece of number 8 wire, which is our fencing wire here. So we always kind of look at round-the-corner ways of doing things here and accessing this ether. I liken it to the unlikely concept of sailing into the wind. Before we've learned how to do that, we get this wind flowing towards us, and how can you possibly create something that just by deflecting that wind a little bit around the sail creates the thrust in the direction of the wind? Well, the ether is always reputedly have been the perfect fluid, so perfect that it flows over and across every atom and molecule in our realm with no resistance. So how on earth do you intercept it? How on earth do you have a relationship with it at all? And we as living biological beings are given this magical gift of life, which is this DNA super curling of energy. Ether likes to curl. This is one of my core kind of sayings that keeps coming up in my head. And so the whole idea of the inertial field of rotational motion, vortex motion being associated with the ether is a key concept. And so I encourage everyone to just explore ideas of in what analogous way could we think up to deflect a bit of this ether in the same uncanny way that we can deflect a bit of wind on a sail and extract work from that process. And I believe that a lot of people are a bit paranoid about the idea that humanity is rising in consciousness enough where we can now perhaps pull together enough integrity and ditch all the greed and stuff and be gifted with the understanding of some technologies which work just as we organic living beings do. We have a birthright to some energy to run our lives and walk around and do all the things we do, and maybe we can be ready to receive these devices that can run off the infinite zero-point energy enough to, you know, run a humble household or a vehicle and get us off the fossil fuel addiction.
It is so interesting to see to regard human beings as similarly zero-point devices, that we have this inner dynamic within ourselves. Like, one of the enigmas in modern science is the generation of the heart. Like, what is the means by which there's this inherent generation of the heartbeat, and how that's remained an enigma within modern science. You can't explain it in terms of four-dimensional space-time and material processes. There instead is some deeper kind of higher-dimensional influence or dynamic that's generating the heartbeat and bringing life into the heart. So we ourselves are somehow tapping energies that emerge within without from that from zero point level.
That is our engine, isn't it? That is our heart, the reactor that taps into that multidimensional source of all and drives us much, you know, all the energy we extract from our food doesn't cover all of the energy we expend as a living being.
Yeah, and how the form generation as we grow, it's like we do grow from something like a fertilized ovum is like it would look the size of a dot on a line. You can barely see a fertilized ovum with the human eye. So in a way, we do go within without from this kind of fertilized ovum, like, and it's this constant reiteration or fractal reiteration from that level. But there's this kind of inherent, there's life inherent to this emerging from within without, and that the formation and growth of biological forms isn't something that's done from without. Instead, it's from within without. It's things emerge out of a higher dimensional physics or metaphysics.
Right, and the DNA has such a fascinating connection into this whole realm with its incredibly cool, kind of braided nature. I just picked up, I think, in one of Dan Winter's newsletters, the latest Russian genome project, sort of a whole official academic work, have proved and stated that DNA can be influenced and reprogrammed by words and frequencies. So the whole intention business that can influence how we grow and how we adapt our DNA, huge potential here for healing work, I believe, in the shamanic sense of reclaiming the integrity of your liver, say, if you're having hepatitis problems or something, and that whole system is kind of falling out of integrity, out of coherence with the rest. So there are many people doing kind of channeling through, like what's called light language and so on, language you can't understand. But it's a way for those higher order frequencies to come through that channel into the room and has the effect of activating all these extra DNA strands that are being talked about, the 12 strands of DNA beyond just the two that are normally acknowledged. They get switched on like other cable TV channels almost by these different words and frequencies that activate them, kind of light language is coming through. Strange new sign languages manifesting in lots of children. And they have all these telepathic kind of phenomena that they're baffling the schools. I had trouble myself. I lecture at university. You know, I don't know how these students get identical answers. I've put them miles apart. They're tapping into each other's consciousness somewhere. Some of these young children now are being shown to be able to see with parts of their bodies that have nothing to do with eyes. And there's all sorts of interesting tests of new faculties. There's all these extra channels of that DNA are opening up. And taking us back to the free energy physics that can run our lives, absolutely, we are the key, the generator, the holy grail is in our own heart. And when we tap into that infinite energy, we are lit up like a light bulb and touch people with that light in our lives. And I think the devices can take us down that same path, really, learning how to emulate that recursion, that sacred geometry of infinite recursion down the way, the curly path of the DNA, may well encourage a lot of ether to manifest or precipitate in that zone and then, you know, produce some electricity or some heat or something that can run our devices in a much more wholesome way and hopefully be nicely self-regulating again, with the idea that if you want your device to run for you, your reward in having that happen is getting your coherence together. If you don't get your coherence sorted well, sorry, you have to walk down to the shop.
So if you don't have the right coherence, heart coherence, maybe you can't start your car. Wow, really very fascinating. And
there'll be a built-in design parameter to any of the devices I create, for sure.
Might be the cure.
Yeah, you shouldn't be going anywhere. You're not ready, right?
You have to get together first. Yeah. You can. I feel a computer voice comes up to get yourself together first.
One of the most interesting, I'd like to bring us back, to something we had talked about earlier that to me was just astonishing when you said this, and was such a valuable idea for me in my own studies at this point. And this had to do, we were discussing the idea of the torus of the heart, and you had reference to the work of, I think, Stan Kenan, who's a Jewish scholar, and he's done the most interesting perspective he offers on the seven-dimensional aspect of the heart torus. Now, for me, this is very significant because in my study of mystical teachings and science, I always try to understand the triune and sevenfold nature of phenomena. So to hear from you that he says there's this seven aspects to the heart torque. Maybe you could say something about that.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I mean, again, in this idea of the universal infinite field of ether upstream of our physical world, the source of everything and so on, the first physical form to manifest and precipitate out of that realm is the smoke ring or the toroid or the donut sort of shape. You can imagine that emerging out of the void. It's the most fundamental manifestation. And then what he proposes is that we form seven equal continents on the surface of this donut. So like continents on the earth, all equal size, equal area continents. And those continents have boundaries where they join each other. If you then trace a line around those boundaries in a certain way, you create this kind of a spiraling vortex tornado looking line that expands out into a sort of a, it's got, he traced the line off the surface of the toroid onto a piece of silver metal and folded it around, so it formed this kind of tornado shape with it. It kind of came broader as it came out, and unusual kind of curly spiral shape. And then his research, as I understand it, has shown that all the letters of the Hebrew alphabet are the different shadow pictures of shining a light at this kind of spiral object at different angles. They all, the shadow that projects on the wall behind forms the Hebrew alphabet. So it's like a two-dimensional sort of secret key that's been given to us that explains the whole physics of the three-dimensional world which this spiral form lives in, and it's kind of the seat of consciousness emerging into matter.
Well, and there's a picture by Jacob Bohm on the spiritual heart. I'm reminded of this. And in the spiritual heart, in this picture, it shows the heart as turned upwards, and it shows it like a fire representing spirit and flames all through the heart, and it has the tetragrammaton written within the heart. So it said that the name of God is written within the human heart. So it's like almost the name of God, and sometimes the name is that like fundamental sound vibration.
Absolutely.
Like, I guess in the Vedas it's like Om, like that fundamental word, or yeah. And then you're saying in this model that there's that fundamental then, or in light though, projects these different forms of the different letters of the Hebrew alphabet, of which there are 22.
Yeah,
22 to me is very significant because 22 represents the completion of three octaves of vibration.
Right.
That, and in the law of three and seven, it's like whenever you consider an octave, in a way you want to consider three parallel octaves, three in relationship. And the sum total of that is 22, which is a magical number. It represents the completion of three octaves of vibration. So if you get to the level 22, then the 22 might become the first of a whole new evolutionary scheme.
Yeah.
It was so exciting to me to hear what you were saying, Chaos, because you were saying it's when light is... In creation, like Genesis, God says, let there be light. And then it's that light is seen as the great protean magician, that light can give rise to all these different forms. So you're actually saying that somehow in the physics of the torus with its seven continents, its seven surfaces, the light reflecting through that torus creates these different forms of all the alphabets.
Yeah, and it's the key to all manifestations. Light coming down from higher order dimensions pops into this dimension in the toroidal form first, and so the study of how this toroidal form behaves is at the essence of so much.
And that might then give us, and it's so interesting, I mean, on the one hand, we're trying to understand like what I would call your monadic essence, I would say a human being has a monad, a triune monad in seven-dimensional hyperspace, is the phrase I use. The idea is that we have this monad in hyperspace, and this monad in the Blavatsky secret doctrine, he says that there is an eternal ceaseless breath. And for Blavatsky, that eternal ceaseless breath is like the quantum jitteriness in the quantum vacuum. The more you go into the quantum vacuum, there's nothing that is ever still. There's always that vibration or motion or spin. And Blavatsky explains when spiritual beings create the material world, they modify the eternal ceaseless breath and upon 7-0 point foundation. So it suggests that there's this seven-dimensional monadic essence that has spin properties with these 0 points within this monadic essence, and that these have spin properties. And that, so when you describe curling, it reminds me of that concept in Blavatsky that 0 point centers have spin properties, and that there's intelligence somehow or information embodied in that spin property.
Right, they've got that sort of tornado form that the shamans talk about so much too, and all the drawings of the chakras in our energy system talk about everything that is associated with that 0 point energy, that kind of inertial field. Inertia is about this as well. You know, one of the simplest concepts of inertia is like tipping your wheelbarrow upside down and spinning the wheel around and building it up, with pulsing energy into it, and all that momentum stored in the inertia has some sort of mysteries about it.
And it's interesting, anything that doesn't have a 0 point center, the inertia slows down the rotary motion and it comes to stop. So you spin the wheel of the wheelbarrow, and it's a non-living system. So it just runs down and it ends, it stops. Whereas a living being, in a way, that spin is inherent to its very self-existence, and you can't stop it. Like that is how we are rooted into these higher dimensions. And so we have these dynamic centers with this energy, I would call it, in line with the secret doctrine. And you described it as curling or vortical activity. And we might imagine vortices are both centrifugal and centripetal. Centrifugal is kind of within without from a 0 point. So it tends to throw off to the outside, whereas centripetal is the return motion towards the center. So it's like the Dalai Lama says, when an infant is conceived in the womb, all of life grows out from the heart, within without from that 0 point center, and it spreads all through the body. But then as the being approaches death, all those vital energies gather again into the heart. So the initial thing is the centrifugal direction, and then at the end of time, everything ingathers again towards the heart. Just like Blavatsky describes the Divine Mother as ultimately collapsing the universe back to her bosom at the end of time. That this divine being ingathers the universe to her bosom at the end of time. So that would be all returning again to the center of our being existence.
Right. It's like a tidal flow of outwards and then inwards and outwards again.
Yeah, tidal flow, and there might even be different tidal flows, like you could take the tidal flow, and then there might be seven levels of that might have an interactive dynamic that you could develop a complex model of these kinds of processes.
I suppose every seventh wave in the ocean is a bigger one, too, when it comes in groups of seven.
Yeah. Yeah, Blavatsky says seven is the number of the divine mystery. And she says the number seven has to do with the mysteries of the ether, because Blavatsky also, as you do, Kaya, she always spells the real ether is A-E-T-H-E-R, I think, which is more in line with the ancient Greek. and she calls it the seven-skinned eternal parent face, and that is the divine mother. And so that's why in Kabir's poem there's seven oceans and innumerable stars. Well, the seven oceans are the seven levels of the ether. So there's that inherent sevenfoldness to creation processes. So I was most excited to hear about this Dan Kennan's work as a Jewish scholar looking at the actual kind of physics of the generation of the Hebrew alphabet. That's amazing. The kind of generation of form out of formlessness.
Absolutely. There's another fascinating science called cymetics, and if any of you Google that, there's some stuff on YouTube of cymetics videos which are absolutely fascinating, like using sound vibrations to generate different physical manifestations in, say, on the surface of water or in some very fine powders or iron filings and so on. And this old guy, Swiss guy, Hans Jenny, in the 1930s made all this film of experiments, and people have picked it up since then, where he says when you need at least five frequencies before you can generate three-dimensional beings and objects in this powder or whatever, and you see it all, little piles of iron filings standing up and marching around beside each other, and you see circulation systems, like in a whole field of fine powder, suddenly you'll get like a heart beating, a circulating system that's stable and circulating and maintaining a form like a toroid emerging out of the void. Beautiful analogous technique to what I understand as the way we manifest out of the void.
There's a Sufi quote that ranks among my favorite, which reads, not since God brought man out of nothingness have we ceased to be traveling. And so that idea of the emergence of form out of formlessness, or life out of nothingness, or it's not really a nothingness, but what seems to be a nothingness. It's really like it's a plenum. The more you go into what seems to be nothing, the more you're in the root principles of creation that somehow contain all things. It's like that zero point is like a portal that passes into the infinite. So I become to nothing, nothing becomes everything. So and the more you strip, come to the nothingness, it's like you can embrace everything. It's like that's like Yogananda's description of cosmic consciousness. You kind of, his consciousness expanded into different levels of the universal structure. And you experience how everything in creation would have the crystallization of light out of the underlying nothingness. And everything has that rhythm of being crystallized out of light and resulting back into light. And that's a continuous living kind of process in all things. Things aren't static at all. They're continually emerging and disappearing into the void all the time. Wouldn't that follow, Tayyip, in quantum theory that seems to be regarded in that way?
Well, absolutely. Like when you like every zero point is like a black hole and a white hole, the other side of a black hole where it all radiates out. And so it is our sort of tap into that infinite embedding of frequencies. Come back to the richness, the frequency set, the heart rate variability, the amount of different frequencies you can have going on in your heart at once gets you closer to that access to that, the everything, the infinite energy, the place they call all that is, beyond all the causal plane and the atomic plane. And, even, you know, I forget who it was, one of the great Einstein or Jung, or someone was saying about, you know, everyone, however they specialize down to their narrowest point of focus, pops out into that realm of all that is, that where they meet everyone else who popped out through their individual forms of specialization.
Yeah. So we're all no name.
What was your name again?
Blavatsky says number issues from no number. The same concept in a simple aphorism.
Yeah, differentiates out of the everything.
We've gone a long time. Sorry, Jim, we've left you in the background there today. It's a little more awkward. Chris and I are on speakerphone, so it's been harder to jump over. Jim, do you have any comments, anything you'd like to make? I realize we only have about 5 minutes or so left.
It's less than that, I think. Hello? Hello?
Oh.
Hello?
Okay, I need to close up very quickly as we're kind of over time. I'd like to thank Tejas very much, and I will have him back within the next month or so for some further discussions once we've been able to share more. I'd like to thank James Moffat in Toronto. Sorry, Jim, we couldn't include you too well because we're using an open mic here. And I would like to thank BBS Radio. We'll be back in 2 weeks. I would like to encourage people to visit www.zeropoint.ca. I put all my favorite songs and music up there to share with people. And I put a lot of new stuff up on my site. Thank you all. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Next show I hope to have on a guest from Uncensored Magazine. John Eisen will be my guest. Okay, thank you all. Let's say...